Welcome to Crawl Space. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. What's up, Lance?
Got a lot of anxiety over here.
Why?
How are you doing today?
I'm well. We are separate, so that's notable. We're not in the Crawl Space studios for the first time in a while, recording one of these.
Not unusual, though, because this is how we've done it before, where we've Skyped. Like, the majority of our podcasting career, aside from the last few months, has been done over Skype, remotely.
Exactly. But
there are reasons to everything, and there's a major reason to this. Everyone's going to get a treat of an episode right now, by the way.
Yeah, it's really a bonus episode. Especially if you heard episode or the episode we posted earlier this week called Street and Low. It was an installment in our Brianna Maitland coverage, episode 9, that we just pulled. We pulled it, and we'll explain why in a minute. but first, let's tell
by
you.
By pulled, we mean it's not there anymore.
Yeah, it's not there anymore. So. But first, let's tell you what we're going to talk about here. This is a vault installment where we switched gears and we decided to talk about some current news, some of the weirdest stories we've seen out there in the past few weeks. I think this is a kind of a fun vault episode to do, maybe even once a month. I think we should probably try to do this.
Well, we've been talking about doing something like this for a long time, doing the expanding on the vault concept, which is you and I riffing on these like fascinating sort of news of the week, you know, but if it's like once a month or whatever. So these like notable news stories that kind of fit into our genre of the mysterious.
Yeah, mysterious. They're weird in some way. They're not like your typical news stories. Yeah.
It's almost news stories that you'd read, or you'd read the headline and you'd say, God, that'd be really fascinating to read. But then you kind of move on to something else, because I feel like a lot of it takes more commitment than just a single like sit down, read story and move on.
A lot of these,
you know what I mean?
I think so. A lot of these are links that we send back and forth. Like if we see a weird article, and our friend Jeff included in this, if we see like something really weird in the news, like these stories we're about to talk about, we maybe send them back and forth. And a lot of times I don't read them all. I kind of like look at the headline, look at the picture, read the first paragraph. I'm like, okay, I get it. Or, you know, so I think that's what you mean. And these we read, we're going to go into depth in, and we're going to break down some of these. So I think it's going to be fun. So yeah, the stories that go ahead. You got something?
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
That's exactly what I meant. Yeah, exactly. Which is you read the headline and you read a little bit of it and then you say, okay, I got it. Because I feel like for me personally, when I read the headline and then a little bit of the story and I kind of scan it, I only do that because I understand that it's going to be a big commitment if I fully invest in that story. And then I start looking into this person deeper and that person deeper. And then I already see like 4 or 5 hours gone.
Right. It's a time sucker. So the stories that we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about the guy from, if you're familiar with the Oxygen Network, and many of you probably watched the disappearance of Maura Murray on there. But if you saw the disappearance of Natalie Holloway, the guy who claimed that he disposed, that he cremated Natalie Holloway's remains was killed. So that's one of the stories. I don't want to get too deep into them, but there's stories like that. Okay. So let's just continue with this intro and then we'll get into these stories. I guess we shouldn't introduce the story. It's going to take too long. No one myself.
We just did exactly what we said we'd do when we first see these stories, when we text them back to each other.
Jesus. So we have a live show coming up next week. If you're listening to this right now, we're recording this on St. Patrick's Day. If you're listening to this, please come to our live show and you're local to the Boston area. We are performing with renowned psychic Lori Bruno at the Rockwell Theater in Davis Square, Somerville, which is right outside of Boston. And it's really just a conversation with one of the most fascinating people I've ever known.
Seriously. This is on Sunday, which I was just informed by Lori's assistant that our show, March 25th, is Sunday. It's Palm Sunday. Lori is a very spiritual person, and she was thrilled that she would be able to share her life, her stories, anything you guys want to know about her on such a significant day for someone who's spiritual like her. So it's Sunday, March 25th at 6 p.m. at the Rockwell Theater, Davis Square, Somerville. There's a restaurant that they're connected to. It's owned by the same group, and it's called Saloon. So it's a great place to go in, grab a bite to eat, grab a drink, and then head down the hall to the little theater. And it's an intimate theater, and tickets are limited, so make sure you get them as soon as possible or ASAP.
Right. Okay, and also check out our Patreon page. We have launched a Patreon page that has been picking up steam of late. And so check it out. It's at patreon.com/crawlspacepodcast. Join the others in there who are wonderful people who are our patrons, and they get exclusive content delivered to them for very cheap prices per month.
Very cheap. I mean, I feel like the money I just spent today on something that was not fulfilling in my life, other than the social aspect. And then I think about the fact that I could, you know, one could spend $1 or $2 a month. And when you break that down, I mean, what is that? That's per day. It's like a ridiculously cheap amount of money to experience the things that we've done, that we just had this conversation about. When we're doing this, we're shooting this, you know, this recording, we have this video going, and we're taking a tour of our building in Wormtown, and then we watch it back and we separate ourselves from the video. It's hilarious. It's a really unique insight into this little world that we have going on here. And for seriously, $2 a month, super fulfilling.
Thank you. I agree, Lance, but maybe we're a little biased, but you should check it out and decide for yourself. Also, okay, so let's talk about the issue here, the reason we pulled the interview, episode number 9 of our Brianna Maitland coverage. It's called Street and Low with an investigative journalist. We pulled it because some of the information he gave was not accurate, and we just didn't really want to perpetuate falsehoods, and so... Yeah, it was kind of a tricky situation the past few days. Something we never ever want to do is pull an episode, but I think this was our best option considering the circumstances.
Yeah, I was just talking to someone earlier on, and I was like, it's baffling that out of the between Maura Murray and all the Crawl Space episodes, out of the like 100 episodes that you and I have done, this is the only one that we've pulled because of misinformation. We pulled one in missing Maura Murray, but that was for a different reason. This was because we had experts close to the case. We had investigators and former law enforcement who are really close to the case listen to it, and for whatever reason, they came back and said this. You know, if you took this one piece out, it might be okay. We also found out that the Vermont State Police were listening to it and essentially said, I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, saying a lot of that stuff was inaccurate. And
yeah.
Go ahead.
And then Tim and I were talking, and we were thinking, well, okay, we can pull that one piece and upload it again. And then you called me pretty shortly after that and told me, no, just it's better to just take the whole thing down. Yeah. Because we don't want to, there's a little piece in there where we say we don't want to like harm the integrity of the case, and it seemed like this was all harming the integrity of the case. But the thing that, and I don't know about you, it's a slippery slope. One, we have to always talk about these cases and get the information out there as accurately as possible. And if the information is not accurate at first, as long as it's not really harming the case, at least people are talking about it and we can correct it later.
Right. Sometimes that's a good thing.
We're fine with that. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Sometimes it's okay. I think, you know, newspapers print retractions every day. So, you know, it is just part of a journalist's job. And really, I'm not calling us journalists because we're not. But we act like that sometimes in this podcast realm that we do. So we do, you know, we take it very seriously. We see it as an obligation to be as accurate as we can. We obviously would never put something out that's false on purpose. So if it happens, we try to address it. And this time there was just too many things about the interview that didn't really need to be out there. Let's just put it that way. Like, you know, and it was, and it, like, some of it was false and inaccurate, and some of it was just slightly inaccurate, and some of it was just like the way he recalled things was, you know, different from how it really happened, probably because of time. You know, he hasn't worked on the case in a while, but ultimately it's in everyone's best for this episode to have not been out there.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's not like the person we interviewed was intentionally lying. I think between our when he first got involved in the case and our interview, I think a lot has happened, you know, and I think a lot has been remembered differently, and I think a lot of these characters and individuals who are involved in Brianna's disappearance sort of conflated a bit in his recollection.
It's possible. Yeah.
Yeah, then the problem is that we don't want to start pushing in the wrong direction.
Yeah,
we want to push, but we don't want to push in the wrong direction and then battle that.
We don't want to undo some of the good that we've done out there, which I think, you know, we can both agree that there has been some good that this podcast has done. And actually, you know, behind the scenes, more is going on than anyone probably realizes. Really, really, our coverage of Brianna Maitland's case has been picking up more in the second year than the first. So I mean, just telling you, this is a good thing. Okay. If you listen to it and you're like, oh, that was good, I want to listen to it again, we apologize. You can't listen to it again. If you never heard it, we certainly apologize, that you can't get that entertainment at this point. But at this point, it's not so much, important information to hear. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I feel like anytime you talk and I have a thought, it's just sort of a slight elaboration on that.
Right.
And then we could look down and realize that an hour's gone by. But I think everyone's got the point that, listen, there's information out there. This just wasn't the way we wanted to present it. And we heard about it through very legit channels that we should not have it out there.
Yeah. Let's move on to some of our stories here, Lance. So the first one is about a guy named John what's that clicking? Are you clicking your mouse or something? What are you doing? What does that sound?
I just kind of bumped something.
You're tapping
over here.
Okay. Coffee. Clean milk. It up over there. Lock it up.
Clean your face up.
It's too late. It's a mess. John Ludwick, who claims Joran Vandersloot paid him $1,500 to dig up Natalie Holloway's body in 2010 in Aruba. And he says that he disposed of her remains. He was fatally stabbed to death recently by a woman that he was trying to kidnap.
Former roommate of his, right? That he had made some advances on in the past, or alleged advances on?
Yeah. In the show, he claims, you know, it gets pretty detailed, I suppose. In the show, he's talking to someone he doesn't think is filming or in recording. And he's talking about how they used to party together and, have group sex together. And then sometimes it went to one-on-one, those two guys. You know, he did his buddy, I guess, a favor and disposed of Natalie Holloway per him. I mean, I don't know. No one knows if this is true. The remain, you know, Oxygen Network's show, the disappearance of Natalie Holloway, it showed that it wasn't Natalie Holloway's body. As the story goes, this guy said that he knew where it was, and he tried to take everyone there, and they found some bone fragments. They tested them. Said it was from a Caucasian woman that would have fit Natalie's profile, but it turned up not to be her.
And this is all in question based on the lawsuit that Natalie's mother is filing right now.
Well, that's a different story. We can talk about that after. Let's talk about this first. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm going more, like, I only bring that up because I want to just question this guy's character. Like, what type of person does something like this what's his motivation for going on a national television show to talk about this, whether it's true or not? It just goes to the character of someone who gets, he gets murdered by somebody who, what, like,
he was
didn't
trying
want
to
him
kidnap
in a romantic
someone.
Way?
So he was trying to kidnap this woman. Who stabbed him, while he was trying to kidnap her. Pretty wild.
Right. Show, shows that she pulls into her driveway, gets out of her car, and he's waiting for her, ready to take her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big surprise when she stabs him numerous times.
Right. And his would-be victim, they did know each other, so authorities said, but they declined to elaborate. So probably some kind of friend or an ex-girlfriend or something like that. No,
it was an ex-roommate.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, they were former roommates, and he had made advances on her in the past.
Yeah. I mean, this guy's a total dirtbag. whether he was lying about the Natalie Holloway stuff or not, he's a total dirtbag.
Right, but exactly. We're talking about my point about whether he was lying about Natalie Holloway kind of relates to, why are you trying to kidnap this person? What is the purpose? What is your purpose of these things that you do that are despicable? Do you think that this man is a psychopath?
I don't know. I watched the show. He seemed, I guess he didn't seem like he had much remorse. There were these videos that a different guy on the show, I forget his name, but he was an informant, and he was really the catalyst for the entire show happening. He called the private investigator of Natalie Holloway's family and said that, look, I've been talking to this guy Ludwig, and he's been telling me all these things, and I've been shooting video. So, and it was like some of the home videos shot years ago where Ludwig saying, like, Natalie, you know, calling Natalie Holloway names and saying she deserved to die and I pissed on her ashes and stuff like that. So yeah, he said she deserved to die. Yeah. Yeah, he was a fucking scumbag and a psychopath. Long way to answer. Yes. Yeah. Terrible.
Right, you'd have to be. Taken from, well, like, why would you even make these videos?
He didn't stop the guy. Like, he wasn't making them. He just didn't stop the guy from doing it. Like, the other guy was like, "Oh, this is funny. I'm recording it." And
right, he was aware though, right?
He was aware. It seemed it. Yeah, sure seemed it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. People like this just doing these things, like what we do here, it just constantly baffles me that even if you are a psychopath, even if you are a criminal or a murderer, that just gives you, like, you just don't have awareness of, you just don't have awareness that what you're talking about right now is being put on tape, and that might be out there somewhere. Someone's recording something. It might be out there somewhere at some point. I guess the motivation for everything really baffles me when you're talking about motivation in respect to awareness.
Well, let me just give a little context, because I think the video that I was describing where he was calling Natalie horrible things was when he was watching his old buddy Vandersloot get sentenced or at least arrested for the murder of a Peruvian woman who is currently serving a prison sentence for murdering. So I think the video, you know, he was all worked up. He was all emotional that he was probably never going to see his friend again. And that's actually exactly what happened. You know, he's got this 20 something year sentence. So he was emotional. So maybe that's where those words were coming from. But still, not cool.
I just don't understand these types of people. And I guess that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, that's what we do. That's why we do what we do. We try to make sense of the unexplainable. That one, that guy, Jesus Christ. You know, you don't like to celebrate death or anything like that, but that guy not being on this planet anymore, I'm fine with that. Totally fine with that. Speaking of not being on this planet anymore, Lance, let's talk about this second story here.
What a good segue.
Yeah, right?
That was a solid segue into this.
I had to jump. I had to interrupt. I saw you were going for the mic. I had to say, no, this is too good of a segue. We got to move on. God knows we'd still be we have another 10 minutes on the first story, and that's all due to you. No, just kidding. It's both of us. So preliminary results from NASA's twins study reveal that 7% of astronaut Scott Kelly's genetic expression did not return to baseline after his return to Earth 2 years ago. So what does that mean, Lance?
Okay, well, the first question that I'm going to have for you is, what did this story mean when you read it? What was the impression that this headline left in for you? Because it is, it's fascinating to read that.
The headline is awesome. Okay, so the headline is astronaut's gene expression is no longer same as his identical twin, comma, NASA finds. Like, I immediately go to, wow, there's going to be a great horror movie written about that that's kind of based on that idea, you know? And I'm like, wow, I kind of want to write that one.
Right. You know? Like, there's something in space that's genetically altering humans' DNA, right?
Oh, it's great.
There's something out there.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a great premise out there that is now based on, that can now be based on fact. So if you're a screenwriter listening to this and you hadn't had that idea, maybe give us a special thanks, but go for it. You know, right, we don't need any credit. Just give us a special thanks.
Well, special thanks down there at the bottom, at the end of the credits, after the music,
yeah,
as people are leaving the theater.
Yeah, yeah. So no, that way no one will see it. But
unfortunately, since that article has come out, there have been some developments, either through misrepresentation, just by. Well, not misrepresentation, more like misunderstanding. A lot of people, when they read gene expression, immediately go to DNA because DNA is mentioned in there.
Yeah.
And that's not so much the case. The DNA will never change between identical twins. A lot of people have started to realize that this is not the intended story. Now, the intended story, the first one that you sent to me was from CNN.
Yeah.
It's basically a scientific breakdown of what happens to the human body, and it's very fortunate that they happen to have identical twins.
Right.
Now, identical twins have identical DNA, but what they don't have is identical gene expression when one is on Earth and one is in space. So they're able to identify between the two. Now, if you and I were in space, we don't have the same DNA, but we might have similar gene expression based on the circumstances of being in outer space and traveling through orbit. Mm-hmm. What they were able to do was look at two identical twins and see what the difference was. And this 7% change wasn't in DNA. It was in gene expression, which is affected and influenced by anything like, lack of oxygen, hypoxia, which is, yeah, you don't have any oxygen, you're in space. So therefore all of these little, you know, everything that influences all of the RNA around your DNA starts to change a little bit and starts to shift. So on the surface, it's a really fascinating story. But after you read it, you realize, oh, it's sort of just sort of a scientific breakdown of what happens to the human body when they go into space and out of space.
Right. Yeah. And I think I noticed here that I feel like the headlines might have changed on this. I think they may have updated it.
Exactly, yeah, because
to say gene expression instead of DNA, yeah.
Instead of DNA, which technically was the
yeah. Okay, so that's,
it was the unexpected thing that happened when I was looking into the story. I even started, you see DNA, and that's probably what it was. Whoever's publishing the story was thinking, no one really knows what's gene expression.
Right.
I'll just say DNA. And then a bunch of people came out and said, no, DNA didn't change, everybody.
Right.
DNA didn't change. It was the influences that... it was the influences of space,
yeah,
exploration, the all of the things that happen when to the human body when you're out there,
right? So
that
this is
affected the gene expression.
Yeah, so this is like a good point for what we are doing this episode for. You know, we do this because we send these articles back and forth, and I'm sure we're not alone. We send these articles, you read a paragraph or two, you're like, holy shit, DNA change, that's an amazing idea for a screenplay. Like, let me rattle that around in my brain for a little, or a podcast. Let me rattle that around in my brain for a little bit. But ultimately,
and that's exactly where our brains went.
Right. But ultimately, you read the article, and I read it, and I was like, this really isn't that surprising at all. It sounds like it's not surprising at all. It actually sounds like it's not that big of a deal, even.
No, it really.
Yeah.
No, it seems sort of like a scientific medical study.
Right. It seems like obvious, actually. And the best thing that I found about it was the reason that they did this. So one, only one of these twins was an astronaut. The other guy was on Earth, which I thought was funny. My head went to like, wow, I wonder what happened if that guy died when this when his brother was in space for the year. Like their whole study would have been fucked. But so he, whatever he does is safe enough, and he made it through another year, and they were able to complete this test. And it was only, this test is only because they're working on sending humans on longer missions, longer than a year, on 3-year missions, right, to Mars. So they want to know what it does to your DNA. So if they test you, if Lance goes up to space, you know, your gene expression changes, you come back, they don't have anything to compare it to other than previous Lance, which is, I think, what you were saying too. And so the fact that, right, they're twins is so cool. They had this amazing chance to do this experiment. So I left reading, you know, left this article being like less like, oh, that should be a screenplay, more like, oh, well, NASA's doing some good stuff. That's good.
NASA's still working.
Yeah.
NASA still has some stuff going on.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like if you and I went to space, there's no reason to test our gene expression between the two of us, other than what it does to the individual person. But the fact that you have identical twins, that's a huge thing for them. And to be able to identify between the two is, I mean, that's such a leg up on scientific study.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
Oh, it's really cool. Actually, I was really relieved when I started reading it and I realized that this wasn't a case of like, we're trying to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, we're searching for an answer. It seemed like
alien
the answer
loose.
Was all in there. What did you say?
Alien loose on Earth. Right. I mean, that's where your head could have went, right? It's like, oh, this DNA is different now. Like, this guy could literally change into an alien. He better be in a fucking lab under lock and key. I've seen Species, Lance. We don't know what's going to happen.
Right. You can't have glass thick enough to keep something like that contained. You can't have a glass cage thick enough. Don't go in there.
I've seen The Fly.
you watch like Alien, for God's sake. That alien could go anywhere.
There's so many space thriller movies that get made. Like, this is already in the works. Like, we're not even kidding. You might think that's funny. That's a joke that we had. That's not a joke. Like, I'm sure there's 5 screenwriters working on a script right now about this.
I guarantee we're going to get emails and people saying these movies already exist and they're going to give us links to the movies that were made in like the 90s.
Right.
With Charlie Sheen.
All right, Lance, let's move on here to my second story. And by the way, this may be interesting. We actually had a draft, which I think is fun with, you know, the NFL season, the NFL draft coming up in April. We did a news story draft. We sent, I think, 6 stories back and forth, and let's choose 2 each. I chose first. I chose the story that we read about that dirtbag, and you chose the DNA story, and then, did you go first? You went first. You chose the DNA story.
Right. I went first, and then I'll be honest here. I didn't hear back right away, and I was like, oh, shit, I screwed up. We were supposed to do this while we were recording.
No.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no, this was fun. No, it was a fun. It was a text draft. It was a you can draft anything. You can draft, you know, anything you want.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. I just thought because I didn't hear immediately back that the intention was to do this like live, to be like, okay, your pick now.
But then I sent you a response probably like an hour later. What do you have, 14?
Yeah, yeah. So it was a very tense hour for me.
So my
I
second
couldn't even
choice,
cook my blue apron.
Right. So my second choice was the AP News headline named "Grandson Wins Bizarre Battle Over Body of Charles Manson."
And I was very excited about that.
My God, and I was kind of surprised that I stole this or that I that I read picked this story. I don't know why I said stole.
Stole.
That was weird. I was gonna say Freudian slip, but I literally have never stolen anything in my life. I don't know where that
I know,
I know where
yeah,
that came from. There was this other story about the, I think story, maybe that was the word, story I was looking for. I don't know. There was this story about 27 pairs of hands that were found in a bag in Russia, in a river in Russia. And I really thought I would be choosing that story, but alas, I chose the Charles Manson story. Little tease for next time. Anyway,
which is fun. See, because you need to land this plane quick.
It is St. Patrick's Day. Take that however you will.
Yeah.
So this really was a bizarre battle, Lance. This was a legal.
You're talking about the Manson one.
Yeah, it's a battle over Charles Manson's body. So Manson was 83. He died in 2017. He was serving a life sentence in Bakersfield, California, for orchestrating the 1969 murders of Sharon Tate, pregnant actress Sharon Tate, and eight others. And there were a lot of people who wanted his corpse, Lance.
Which isn't surprising when you hear of a celebrity who's died and, you know, who recovers the property of the celebrity, including the body, you know, any works that they've done, if they're, you know, an artist of some sort, what they've written or painted, or, you know, you experience that with Prince's estate, Michael Jackson's estate. The thing that really bugs me about this, and I was so glad you picked this, because I think I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm so sick of hearing of Charlie Manson. I'm glad he's dead. I'm glad he's gone. I'm glad that he's out of the limelight of, you know, every once a year you hear some weird story about Charlie Manson. You can't even, you know, Guns N' Roses released Use Your Illusion, and all of a sudden Axl Rose has a music video and he's wearing a Charlie Manson shirt and there's like music that's inspired by Charlie Manson on this album. It's like, can't I just enjoy a Guns N' Roses album without Charlie Manson being a part of it? Like, I'm so sick of Charlie Manson and I'm sick of the people who are fighting over his body.
Yeah. They
burn his body, get rid of it, let's move on. He's part of history. He's part of a terrible like cult section of the 60s. Learn from it and move on. What is a good that's coming out of keeping Charlie Manson's body?
Well, I don't think we're going to be moving on anytime soon. We as a society.
That's not going to make us move on.
No, your rant is not going to work. It's not going to affect the documentary film crew that has been following the guy who was awarded Charles Manson's body.
Who is this guy? This Freeman guy?
Yeah. Freeman. He is a the grandson. So
Jason Freeman, who is the alleged grandson, right?
Right, and there were some others. So there were other people who claimed to be his grandson. And also, this story, Lance, you know, if we're being honest here, began like a year ago when Charles Manson got married in prison. Do you remember this story? He got married to like a 20-something-year-old woman who...
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Of course I remember it.
Right. Right. Her goal was, I mean, that was one of the articles we forwarded each other then. Her goal was to tour his body around when he died.
Right. Like the goddamn Charlie Manson traveling sideshow.
Right.
Yeah. You sent this story a year ago and I read it and I rolled my eyes and I thought, why is Charlie Manson still making news?
Yeah.
This dude, Jason Freeman, claims, or he is the son of Charles Manson Jr., mm-hmm. who was the child of Manson and his first wife, and then changed his name to Charles J. White and then killed himself.
Right. It must be a pretty tough, like a burden, being the son or spawn of a serial killer. You probably feel evil in some way.
Or responsible. This is, again, I don't know why I'm confused by this. I guess because I'm just not a part. I guess I've never had this happen to me before, but if this was me, I'd just wash my hands of the whole thing. Do what you want to do with the fucking body. It's Charlie Manson. I don't want anything to do with him. I'm trying to live my life over here.
Yeah. Yeah, there was another purported son, Matthew Lentz, who claimed he was fathered by Manson during an orgy he had in Wisconsin. So, I don't know. And the guy who was awarded the body... There apparently is this video online that shows Freeman's son, that's the guy, Freeman, his son playing with a Manson puppet, complete with a swastika on his forehead, which is what Charlie Manson had on his forehead, and Freeman joking about stuffing the doll with Manson's ashes and taking him fishing.
Sure, that makes sense, right? I have no idea. I can't even speculate to the intricacies of a family relationship when Charlie Manson is your grandfather, a close relative, which is just fucking crazy that this one person has affected so many people like this, has had an impact on generations.
Yeah. Yeah, really just a bizarre story. People really mad about this ruling too. You know,
where do you get a Manson puppet, by the way?
He probably made
I'm
it.
I'm not Googling that.
Oh, I'm sure if you Google it, there's plenty.
I won't.
Yeah, but he might have made it. I mean, if he was going to stuff it with the ashes, he would have made it technically. But, I mean, yeah, just a weird one. A weird story.
Like, who honestly, if anybody thinks that they're going to make a significant amount of money off of this by parading his dead body around, you'll make a little bit of money, but it certainly is not going to be worth the reputation and whatever like ill comes of doing this. This is one of the most despicable people in American history. Yeah. In history.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What he did, like how he like brainwashed people to do what they did, and then how he just manipulated people in the media.
Yeah.
And if you think you're going to make $1 million off of this.
well, he's also got a song. I guess he's written some music. And
oh, Charlie Manson was a big he was a big musician. Yeah. He was very influenced by the Beatles and the Beach Boys.
Well, it doesn't mean he's good. I was too.
I did not say he was good.
Okay. yeah, but and also to prevent photos of the body being leaked, the coroner's office stored his remains under a pseudonym and only told two employees his true identity. And they really wanted his body out of there to make way for incoming cadavers. Just a weird story all around, Lance. I don't even know what to make of it. But like you said, it's hopefully, you know, we're getting closer to the day we can stop talking about Charles Manson.
Yeah, and why didn't we talk about this with Jeffrey Dahmer when Jeffrey Dahmer died? You know, unless I'm missing something, and you know, if anybody out there knows anything about Jeffrey Dahmer's body, if there was a big fight for it, but I just the fact that you know, I get that people are psychopaths, and I get that people are mentally sick. I you know, chemical imbalances. I understand that, but Charlie Manson, he was a manipulator, and that's the thing that really like fires me up when we talk about things like this, that he manipulated the media, his family, the people that followed him, and even after he's dead, he's manipulating people.
Yeah, well, I think he was unique, so I think that's actually the answer to some of these. Like, I think, like, Jeffrey Dahmer, he was, you know, just another Israel Keys, just another BTK guy. Charles Manson is still talking
another
about
serial killer
today.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of how he did what he did, and the really, you know, the manipulation, not so much the hands-on murdering. It made him unique,
and it's crazy because Charlie Manson never murdered anybody.
Yeah,
he just mind-washed everyone into doing what he just didn't have the conviction to do himself.
And speaking of mental illness, Lance, that brings us to our final story here tonight.
Which I loved at first, which I'm sorry, I'll say that again, which I hated at first and I love now, and it took a completely different turn for me.
Yeah, it's a really odd story. 20-year-old Kaylee Muttart speaks out for the first time. She gouged her own eyes out while she was on meth. And that's what happened.
Right.
That's
so. If anybody's heard this, this is one of those stories that comes up, and you say, "Oh God, terrible." I'm gonna say it's Kaylee Muttart. Seems like the TH, but should be.
I would say Muttart, but we can just move
okay.
on.
Yeah,
we can probably just
yeah.
move on though.
I've heard it both ways.
I'm guessing it's Muttart, but we can move on probably.
Anyway. This is something that you read. I'm the girl who clawed her own eyes out. This is my story. This is a Cosmopolitan article, which was fantastic. it's graphic. Anyone listening now, anyone who hasn't read the article, it's graphic. It graphically describes how she pulled her eyeballs out. And when you first look at this and you see that headline and the first time you read the words methamphetamines and meth and drug, then you think, oh, it was a drug-induced, you know, paranoid episode. And that's why I didn't really like it at first. But the more I thought about it and the more I read it, and then when I started thinking about the other story with the DNA and the identical twins, Scott and Mark Kelly, and being in space and how DNA is affected, and just the perception of things, I really walked away from this thinking that this person, this Kaylee, I sort of respect what she did.
I don't know what you're talking about. She tore her eyeballs out, and it was because she was high and she thought it was a sacrifice she was making for the good of the people on this planet. It was sort of like a religious epiphany she believed she was having at the time.
Well, okay. This is someone who was raised in a small town, and there's very few things that you can be convicted or you can have serious conviction towards. Religion, and these things that you know, education, your family. So you can have very specific feelings, strong feelings about these things, right? So she was also diagnosed bipolar, which is what you forgot to mention. She was diagnosed as bipolar. She was very religious. She wanted to be close to God. And when you want to be close to God and you have this confliction inside you where she started to smoke marijuana, she started to drink alcohol, and that introduced her to a group of people that I believe she smoked a joint and she started to feel a high that she hadn't felt before. So it was possible that this marijuana was laced with something.
Yeah.
So at no fault of her own was she introduced probably to another drug, probably meth, amphetamines, or something to that nature, but she ended up smoking meth. Now, she's having this confliction going on with everything that's in her life that's important to her, that she knows is important to her, family, faith, friends, and she finds herself one day at a railroad track, and she's trying to figure out why she's even there. I'm not saying there at the railroad track. I'm saying why she's even existing. Because she can't seem to figure out her own head. She's bipolar.
But you're putting yourself in her shoes at that moment, though?
Me? No. I'm actually looking, like, this is from her words.
Okay,
like,
yeah. So she wrote this article or co-wrote it with a journalist?
She told it to Elizabeth Nairns,
yeah.
Who wrote the article.
Okay, so go ahead.
For everything leading up to this moment has been dealing with her the bipolar diagnosis that she had and the perception of religion that has been in her life since she was born. And then this drug influence, this unexpected drug influence, by the way, she never wanted to be, I mean, no one wants to be a drug addict. No one wants to be hooked on meth. And
right.
Then she finds herself there. Someone at the scene who happens upon the scene mentions the word key, like a locking key. And for some reason, that triggers something in her head where she thinks there's something that I need to, like, search for. There's a key. And I don't know, for whatever reason, that's what caused her to put her fingers in her eyes and pull them out. After she's done that, she said that her life is so much better. And that's where the turning point happened for me when I was thinking about this whole thing and reading these articles. She says, if I stub my toe because I can't see, that just means that it's stopping me from hitting something bigger, like a wall. So she'll sacrifice stubbing her toe if that means not crashing into a wall.
That's what she's saying now that she's blind, now that she's not high and
right.
Everything. Yeah. But this isn't a wise girl when she did this. This is not like some like informed decision she made or, you know.
Oh, I'm not saying it was an informed decision.
You know, this was.
Yeah, but actually, I'm not. I'm not saying it wasn't a consciously informed decision.
Okay, yes, it was actually. Well, I don't know about the eyes, but there's a line here. She says, after that, I steered clear of meth, but felt so low that I asked one of my roommates who dealt drugs for ecstasy. So this is after she had already found out that the marijuana she smoked was laced with likely meth, and she had become addicted, and then she was living with a drug dealer. So,
of course.
So if you want to get away from that, get the fuck away from it. Don't live with a drug dealer.
Of course.
Yeah.
Right. So what she ends up doing is goes to the most extreme measure, which was taking away her visual interpretation and perception of what was bringing her down, which was her eyes.
Yeah.
And the eyes aren't just like what we see things with. It's how we interpret everything. And we're all like in this box. We don't have any internal vision. All she has now, she wanted to strip out the external vision. She needed to get rid of that.
You're trying to break down what she was thinking when she was high. Like, who the hell knows? There's no rhyme or reason. I'm sorry. There's no rhyme or reason.
I think.
Whatever she says now about it doesn't necessarily mean it was true. This article actually annoyed the shit out of me because of what I just read to you. Like, I had a totally different reaction from it. It's like she tries to come off like, I'm better now. Like, literally, she says, I feel better now about my life. And while I'm happy, she feels better now. She's not addicted to drugs anymore. She says she wants to be a marine biologist. That's all great. But I feel like she's not taking responsibility for what she did still.
But what kind of, I have 2 points on that. What kind of responsibility do you expect her to take other than the fact that she did rip her eyes out? And two, if she didn't do this, she'd be dead by, she would have a life that countless other people her age who are in that situation just fall into because they just didn't do anything about it. And I am not saying go gouge your eyes out, but she went to this ridiculous extreme, whether she knew it or not, because she was high, or whether she needed a fix on something, or whether it was a combination of being high and bipolar. She reached in, and she even says, like, she would have clawed right into her brain if she wasn't stopped. If she wasn't stopped from doing that, she would have clawed into her brain. I just think that it's an amazing moment in someone's life where they can do something so horrible to get something so bad out of themselves and then come out the other side and say, I'm a better person. Because she wouldn't have been a better person if she didn't do this. She'd be right. The same stupid drug dealing, drug using meth head, and probably would have died at like 34.
Yeah.
With like 2 kids.
I'm with you. I'm happy. I'm happy that she's living drug free now, and she seems like she's on a good path and everything. I feel like she's missing the larger point. Like, isn't the larger point she should try to teach kids, you know, about drug use, or herself be this huge example for mental illness, which is really what she is.
And I think that's I think that's what she's doing with these articles.
I think the article is a little bit of oblivious to what the reality is, though, to be honest.
That's funny. I took it the other way. I think she put these details out there in such horrific the depiction of it was so horrific, and the progression of I this is how I was raised.
I don't know.
Religion was a big thing. Family was a big thing. And this is how I fell into drug abuse. And this is what I did because of it. I think a lot of people would read that and say, this seems very familiar to the way I am right now. If they were in that situation, if someone was slipping into this drug use, she even says, I never thought marijuana was a gateway drug. She probably doesn't think so, but it was the person who gave her the marijuana that was laced with something. So I think just by, instead of being heavy-handed and preachy about it, she tells her story. And that story is very familiar to a lot of people, I think.
I think it's a little preachy, but I do appreciate that she told her story. I'm definitely not trying to badmouth this woman. You know, I just, it's, the whole situation is weird. I don't know how it's going to play out, but I really feel like she should use this story, you know, and for more than this article. Also, this article has a GoFundMe link in it where she's trying to raise $50,000. So, you know, she's raised 42,000 as of right now. So I'm happy for her, happy that she's raising money, but maybe there was some motivation to the article. Just saying, like, and you know, there's a lot of religion talking about in this article. Like, she's a religious person. She hasn't strayed whatsoever from that. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you and I talk about religion, and we're not religious people at all. I'm the furthest thing away from, you know, being religious, but there is something to be said for having the conviction to do something to put yourself on another level that I respect.
I'm happy that this is in Cosmo, right? Because so young women will listen, will read this this article, and they will be inspired. They will say, I will never do drugs, hopefully. I don't want that to happen to me, obviously. So that's all great. But it's on Cosmo. It's not for mental illness, or it's, you know, it reads like it should be on like christiandaily.com or something. I have no idea if that's a website or whatever, but
I get what you're saying there. I think it might be something we talk about with Brianna a lot, which is this whole, you know, the people read about somebody in this situation in a town like that, and they're doing meth and they're doing drugs, and this, like, this drug prejudice, this, you know, it's a dirty story. So I don't know who would want to pick this up. I don't know who would want to talk about something like this. There's so much other shit out there in the news.
I'm just saying,
you know,
focus on the mental illness aspect of it, because that is kind of buried in the story. Like, she does mention that she's mentally ill, but really, in her own words, when she's able to tell the story in her own words, she keeps going back to faith and how, you know, she's happy to be here. And if she stubs her toe, she knows it's okay. And all that. But really, like, you know, I don't know, maybe it should be more preachy towards people who are mentally ill. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the whole
thing. It's such a touchy subject and
a huge
issue.
And you can get into it deeper, you know, you can get into it as deep as you know, you can find all of these avenues that you can go down when you're talking about this, and faith being one of them. And I thought I would be annoyed when I read about like her faith references, her being a, you know, devoted, you know, to God and all that. But there's the, like, what is this, cleanliness is godliness. She wanted to clean out what was dirty, and the things that she saw and the things that influenced her made her a bad person. So whatever that was needed to stop, and she ripped her eyes out. Like, that to me was such, when I read this article and I thought about that, and I thought about how close, because she keeps saying how close she wanted to be to God. And if you want to be clean and close to God, you don't want to be influenced by these things. How do you fix that? And with being on meth and being bipolar, holy shit, she ripped her fucking eyes out. Like, that to me is just blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a perfect storm of things, you know, religion, drugs, and mental illness that made this story what it was, you know, what it is. But for poor Kaylee, and, you know, I feel bad for her. I feel bad for her family. It's an awful story. You know, I really, really hate it. Really hate it, like you said earlier. But
you know what?
Hopefully it does teach mentally ill people and drug addicts. You know, hopefully it really does help to inspire people and does some good for this world.
Yeah. And I honestly, like, I don't feel as bad as you feel. I feel like if this is what she needed to do to make things better and to put things back on the right track, like, I'd rather see that happen for the course of, you know, a couple of hours of the actual act of ripping her eyes out, plus going to the hospital, plus, like, everything else. So we'll say, like, a 3-month period of, you know, kind of real shitty situation. I'd rather see that than someone fall in line with just the regular crap that happens with people who are mentally ill and have drug issues.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for listening to this episode. This is sort of bonus episode of Crawl Space. Thank you very much. Follow us on Twitter at Crawl Space Pod. We're on Instagram and Facebook. Also, check out our live show if you're listening to this before March 25th, 2018. We'll bring you some of that
live
audio.
Live show.
Oh, that's going to be so great, Lance.
Davis Square, Lori Bruno, Somerville, Mass. It's going to be fun. 6:30. Tickets are cheap. Check them out. I'm mentally exhausted right now.
When a person goes missing, their loved ones often find themselves overcome with worry and grief. Bruce Maitland started the 501c3 nonprofit organization Private Investigations for the Missing because he knows this feeling all too well.
When Bruce's daughter Brianna disappeared in March 2004, he was surrounded by licensed private investigators dedicated to finding her. Now his mission is to provide dedicated private investigators at no cost to other families of the missing, desperate for answers but without the financial means.
Private Investigations for the Missing needs your help. To read the mission statement, make a donation, and keep up with our blog, visit us at investigationsforthemissing.org and follow us at PI for the Missing on Twitter and Facebook and Investigations for the Missing on Instagram.
Because forever is too long to wait.